As I say, before we begin our agenda, I would like to introduce a very special guest speaker for this evening. And we are pleased to have Anne Burrows, who is our board chair, open with a few words for us. Anne, do you wish to begin?
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Ed. Hi, everybody. I'm very, very pleased to be with you, to be with you all. You know, we're talking tonight, as we'll hear more as the program unfolds, we're talking tonight about our work to push back against the Trump administration's policies that violate human rights of refugees and immigrants. So thank you to all for being on the call, and to our thousands of members across the country who've joined this campaign over the last few weeks. I know that, you know, all of us have been out there diligently. Some of us are quite tired at this point. I think many of us are feeling a sense of fatigue, but also at the same time an enormous amount of energy. And, you know, what we hope that you'll be able to get out of the call tonight is to understand, of course, we all know that there's a huge task before us, but we're an incredibly strong movement. You know, we're in cities across the country, and certainly tonight, you know, we hope to be able to provide you with some inspiration about what people are doing all over the country, but also to be able to walk you through some of the tools that we think that will help you be much, much more effective as we sort of collectively take on the battle that's before us. So over the last couple of weeks, our Amnesty members across the country have either led or joined or organized hundreds of protest actions, other events. Tens of thousands of our members across the country have made phone calls to representatives. And then many of you this week, including I'm sure many of you who are on the call this evening, are going to be going to town hall meetings, you know, meeting with congressional staffers, hosting meetings to strategize, particularly when you go to those meetings, you know, to demand that representatives do their job, and that they stand up for what's right. So, you know, what we really need you, you know, we need you more than ever to help build this movement. We know we've already seen what's been rolled out over the last couple of weeks. You know, certainly the new regulations that came out yesterday on immigration continue the Trump administration's incredibly inhumane approach to immigration and refugee policy. This week we're expecting to see a revised Muslim ban, which will also certainly have the same intent and virtually the same impact. And there's no question, however, that Amnesty, along with other partners across the country in communities all over, have been part of this movement that so far has been able to stop the Muslim ban. So, we have to continue. We have to continue to ensure that discrimination and prejudice doesn't become law. So our role over the next while is to build our capacity, to build our activist capacity on the ground for the long haul, because it is going to be a long haul. We need to be able to sustain that pressure on members of Congress for the next 4 years. It's going to be difficult to do because I think many people are already tired. There's definitely a sense of fatigue. People are running themselves ragged because there is just so much, and people are just working so hard. So what we, you know, as I said at the top of my remarks, what we want to be able to do tonight is to, you know, find ways to sustain that energy. You know, each of us, I mean, the most critical thing for us to do to sustain that energy and build that movement is for each of us to bring more people in, you know, to backstop the work that we're doing, to step in, to organize additional stuff, and really to be very targeted and to hone our approaches. So that's what we're going to try to do, tonight. So thank you to all of you. Thank you to the folks that are going to be presenting this evening. and just on we go. It's we're in the hell of a fight. Thanks, Ed.
Great. Thank you, Anne. We really appreciate you stepping in to speak with all of us tonight. Okay, so I will begin my normal way. Hello again to all the Amnesty members, member leaders, and students. And I want to extend a special welcome to everyone who may be joining us for the first time. And special thank you, too, for those who are returning. You know, we're always happy to have you back with us. And, you know, there are some people that I see come back again and again, so thank you. And again, as Anne mentioned, the focus tonight for the call is very special because in the just a few short weeks, we've seen with the administration, citizens across the U.S. stand up to reject these executive orders that close the U.S. borders to refugees, people seeking asylum, and people from seven Muslim-majority countries. So in response, Amnesty activists around the country have organized No Ban, No Wall, peaceful protests, and vigils in their communities. So we'll spend some time tonight learning about the actions you can take and hearing what actions our own member leaders have taken. So we have also reserved a special section tonight, I'm excited about this, to hear how our youth members have organized creative actions to support No Ban, No Wall. And as you know, our intent on these calls is to create an opening and a space for members, member leaders, and students to communicate, ask questions, share information with other members, member leaders, and students across the country. As you know, my name is Edwin Gore. I am membership coordinator at Amnesty International. I've been involved on staff for, well, many years in several roles. And before that, I began my Amnesty journey in local Group 9, which has now become Group 9-280 and still working in Manhattan. So let's just get started with this. Let me introduce you to our speakers for this evening. Each one provides a really unique perspective on No Ban, No Wall. They are Jeeva Mansky, who is Managing Director of Organizing and Activism at AIUSA, Kalyan Mendoza, who's Field Director at AIUSA, Shannon Rossett, Area Coordinator in Arizona, and then our special student this evening, Mohini Tangri, who's Student Activist Coordinator in Lexington, Virginia. Amber Martin, who is a representative of the National Youth Action Committee in the South. And Kaylee Meyer, Student Activist Coordinator, and she's also the group president of her Amnesty group at Berkeley High School in Berkeley, California. So before we begin, I have two requests, ground rules for those calling in, and I can hear something in the background. Could you please remember to mute your phone when you're speaking, when you're not speaking, rather, and please avoid using a speakerphone because we get an echo back. And also remember to speak directly into the phone. We're on, you know, a phone conversation here, so we want to hear you clearly. Also, when you do speak, please state your name, where you're calling from, and any role you play in Amnesty. Okay? So those are the ground rules. Let's move on to this really important agenda. So Jeeva, could you introduce yourself and then lead us off, please?
Sure. Thanks, Ed, and welcome again, everybody. I have a few things that I'll say, and I also want to use my time to to invite some dialogue. So if you have questions along the way, or if there are things that you really want to get out of this call, I just want to underscore that although, you know, it sounds like we have a big lineup of speakers, which we do, and each of our scheduled speakers have a lot to say. Many of you who are on this call, including some of the voices I've already heard, have been doing great work too. And so want to make sure that there's space for both questions and, you know, ideas and that kind of thing. And I really appreciate the way that Anne framed things up at the beginning in a lot of ways. And so many of the things that I'll say may underscore some of those pieces. And the two that I think jump out the most to me, one is that this is one of those moments that really called on all of us. You know, we need more activism, more creativity, more energy, and more people, really. And I think, you know, we feel the urgency. Many of you on this call feel the urgency, and many of those in your community do too. And I think one of the things that I'm hoping you take away from this call is some more energy to be able to bring those folks in and help them get to work. And then the second piece is that Anne underscored that, or Anne said that I want to underscore, is just the acknowledgement of that. Yeah, many of us and many of you are tired, and that is certainly yes because of these last several weeks. I also want to acknowledge that there are several people on this call who have been fighting for human rights for much longer, right, than these last few weeks. Some for a few years, some for many years. And I think that's one of the things that makes Amnesty International unique, and some of the value that we bring to times like this, which is that we, who are part of Amnesty International, really understand what it means to be in it for that long haul. And, you know, as you might be able to hear in my voice, I am one of the people who is tired. But I also want to say that the part of that is that is certainly from, you know, long hours, but also because many of those hours are spent talking to new folks and talking to many of you and, you know, just bringing in a lot of that energy. And so I may sound tired, but I'm also appreciative. You know, so I want to say a few things about what our campaign is. And then, like I said, open it up for a couple of minutes and then pass it along. But really, you know, we have a couple of campaigns that we expect to last for a couple of years, and many of you have worked on the campaign for refugee rights, and we expect to do more work on human rights defenders and the right to peaceful protest. So with those in the background, when President Trump signed the executive order that restricts the rights of refugees and immigrants and discriminates against Muslims, which, you know, many have referred to as the Muslim ban or the travel ban, what many of you did and what all of us on Amnesty International USA staff and many Amnesty members and staff members across the world did is decided that right now is the time for us to say no as loudly as possible, that we are going to stop discrimination in its tracks, and we're going to stop discrimination from becoming law of the land, the hateful rhetoric, the fear-based rhetoric that defined the Trump campaign and that was underscoring this executive order was not going to stand. And so we've oriented a lot of our work and mentioned you know, thousands of folks, Amnesty members and others in the streets, in airports, in other places, protesting. And the hundreds that are, actually tens of thousands actually, that have made phone calls. But our campaign so far has centered around Senate Bill 274, which was introduced by Senator Dianne Feinstein from New York, Democratic senator, and has been co-sponsored by 46 total people, total senators. And that Senate Bill 274 would nullify the executive order. And so our campaign has really been to target seven specific Republicans, ask them to co-sponsor the bill. And those seven senators happen to be Republican, because this particular bill falls, you know, pretty starkly along party lines. And, you know, one of the strengths that Amnesty brings is that as a nonpartisan organization, regardless of what party is in the executive branch or in either chamber of Congress, our job is to hold those people who are elected officials accountable to human rights. So in this case, you know, we're pushing on senators like Senator Flake and McCain in Arizona, which, you know, we'll hear more from Shannon and others a little bit later, and senators in Wisconsin and Nebraska, Pennsylvania, Florida, and a few others. So that's the kind of underlying campaign at the moment. And at the same time, you know, as members, as all of you go to town hall, make more phone calls, organize events, again, you know, in the background are things like yesterday seeing a new order from the Department of Homeland Security that that issues new policy on immigration, which, you know, likely will lead to more human rights abuses. And continues the Trump administration's inhumane approach to both immigration policy and to immigrants themselves, essentially writes, you know, racial profiling into policy. We expect, again, we expect a revised executive order, the Muslim Ban 2.0, any moment now, which may have some watered-down legal language, but still actively discriminates against against people because of their where they were born and because of what they believe. So, what I'm what I want to just ask you to do is think about how you can do some of what Amnesty does best right now. You know, ultimately, we need to see in the coming weeks more and more activism. And what I want to ask you is to think about three things. One is that Amnesty is about holding governments accountable. You know, that's where the phone calls come in, and where lobby visits, stopping by your district office to drop off materials, scheduling a visit with your member of Congress, working with our legislative coordinators to do that is really important right now. And we need to build more and more towards that powerful grassroots advocacy core that will help us sustain that pressure over the course of the next few years. And our next moment there is going to be particularly around lobby weeks that are coming up in mid-April. Second, Amnesty International and each of you want to think about how we make sure that we're lifting up the human stories. It's easy to talk about policy, and it's easy to talk about President Trump. But at the end of the day, these policies have real effects on real people's lives. You know, people like Hanan Azad, a 78-year-old Iranian grandmother who comes to the United States to visit her 10 children, and, you know, the Saturday after the executive order was signed, arrived in Los Angeles and was detained by border agents, ended up detained for 27 hours in LAX. You know, or someone like Hamid Darwish, who served as a translator in Iraq, twice targeted by terrorists in his own homeland, you know, and has been through quite a bit, and he's, you know, coming to move to South Carolina, but detained at Kennedy for 18 hours before being released. This week, we have Amnesty researchers on the border, the southern border, collecting stories of asylum seekers who are being deported. And, you know, making sure that we lift up those stories, and also mobilizing those human qualities in each of our neighbors and our friends to make sure that they're standing up for human rights as well. And then finally, and the last thing that I'll say is that I want to ask everybody to be strategic. You know, we have some resources at our fingertips, and each of you may be part of a small group, maybe part of a large group of people. You know, but the resources that may feel like they're at your fingertips might seem scarce in relation to what we're up against. but the power of amnesty activism and of organizing really is to be strategic and to turn those resources you have into the change that you want to see. And we've seen, you know, over many years of movements that small groups of people who are smart and strategic and who work together, who, you know, partner across differences across organizations and bound together by common values have been able to make huge differences. And I think right now is one of those times that is really needed. So again, I think I may have taken up too much time for too much dialogue, but I want to leave it with that and just ask that you keep those pieces in mind as you devise your next steps, as you come up with your next creative ideas, that they are, you know, targeting governments, that they're lifting up human stories, and that they're as strategic as possible. So I'll stop there. Ed, I don't know if I have for questions, but I'll be around for the rest of the call. So if we want to pass it over to Kalyan or whoever is next, that's fine. And if questions come up, I'm happy to jump in later.
Oh, that's good. I mean, we should take a little breather here. Does anybody have a question for Jeeva?
Hi, Ed. This is Hillary.
Hi, Hillary. Go ahead.
Just a couple. I hope they'll be quick. Firstly, want to remind everyone that the Membership Empowerment Training Project is a resource that people can draw on in this time. Even though we have only 20 trainers right now across the country, by April the 3rd, we will have another 16 ready to help groups plan and strategize for this kind of work. And secondly, if there's time, I would like to hear more about our advocacy strategy. We are too thin on the ground to get into every district office in every state, and it's probably not worth going to many of them. But there are some places where it's possible to change somebody's mind or get them to listen to you. And I wonder what our strategy is to grow amnesty in those particular target districts. If they are our target districts, or if we have to wait until we have a 501c4 to do that. So that's my question.
Great. I can just say a couple of words on that. I really appreciate those questions. For one, because I think actually a big part of how we're going to grow in those target districts is through working with the member empowerment training trainers and other trainers that either come in through that program or folks who emerge and then, you know, get funneled through that program. So I think that ability to connect with other people and facilitate learning with others, that's going to be one of those vital skills, I think, in this. And, you know, so over the course of the next couple of weeks, especially, I shouldn't say the next couple of weeks, over the course of the next several months, making sure that we're able to work together to build those out, I think, is really vital. I don't have the full list of all of the, let me see, I do have the full list of target states where we want to have specifically build more capacity. And for those of you who might not hear your state on this list, it doesn't mean, you know, don't do anything. But I think to Hillary's point, there are some members of Congress, senators in particular on this list, who we think that by sustained pressure, we can either change people's minds or continue to hold them accountable. And so that's in states like Missouri, Michigan, Montana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Maine, Florida, Indiana, California, Virginia, and New York. And I think to the question about how we're going to grow, I think it happens in a few different ways, and I'll just name a couple. One is that as events and actions happen, I think it's really up to any of you who are on the phone, but anybody who's at those places to really cultivate some of those skills about how to have good, you know, one-on-one conversations to help bring people into the movement. So that kind of face-to-face conversation, even in the digital age, is still to me after, you know, 15, 20 years of organizing, the number one skill that I think that we need connected to that is using our phones. I think it's really easy in this day and age to just rely on social media or email to reach people, but and pick up the phone, talk to each other, connect with each other. And I think that actually does lead to growth. And then the second thing is being smart and strategic about, you know, a lot of organizations, Amnesty included, have lists of, online action takers and donors and people who do both, and many of you on this call, but that we are smart and strategic about connecting with people and who may be somewhat new to activism or may be used to only clicking online petitions, and giving them concrete opportunities to take that leadership to the next level. That's not, you know, and I'm happy to talk with anybody outside of this call, you know, more about specific ways that we can set some of those things up over the course of the next few weeks and months to test and innovate to make sure that we're doing that really well. Just wanted to name those couple things because I think, that's what's going to be needed now. And there are many other things that we can do, but those are just two.
Okay, thanks, Jeeva. I think we need to move on a little bit here. We can always come back to questions. And I'm hoping that people would be patient and perhaps stay a little longer on this call because we do want to cover everyone here. Can we move on to Kalyan? Can you help us out with how groups can take action?
Most definitely. How's everyone doing? Good evening, everyone.
What up?
Well, thank you all for being on the call. My name is Kalyan Nabista. My background is on nonviolent direct action organizing. Sorry, is there an echo?
Too quiet.
Echo from? I'm sorry?
Yeah, if everyone would mute their phone again and not be on speaker.
Awesome. Well, I first wanted to open with a question for folks. And I'd like to ask folks in different regions to share, one person per region, to share a tactic that you've seen that has been really inspirational to you or your group. And it can range from everything from a candlelight vigil to a banner hang to a protest and anything else that really kind of resonated with you in the past couple of weeks. I was hoping to start out with the Mighty Mighty West. And let's see, I know we have some folks from the West. Is there anyone that wants to share out a tactic that we've seen in the past few weeks that has inspired you?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yeah, of course. Have you participated in or seen a tactic, some kind of direct action tactic that has inspired you or your group? And that can be anything from a candlelight vigil, a street protest, to a projection action. I just wanted to kind of get a flavor of what kind of tactics people are seeing across the country.
This is Shannon. If I can chime in really quick. I was going to save this for my talk, but if we could, this actually has to do with what you're talking about, Kalyan. And I brought a student here from Phoenix. Michaela is on the call with us, and she just, as her first organizing experience ever, I believe, she created a rally to support our local Muslim community. And so, if Michaela, if you could actually take this time really quick, just because it was super inspiring to me, and it grew to about 500 people at this rally. So if you could briefly talk about that, because I think that inspired a large number of people here in the Valley.
Yeah, sure, of course. So, hi, I'm Michaela Termino. I'm from Phoenix, obviously, and I'm in my senior year of high school, and yeah, what Shannon says, this was my first action of any sort that I planned. But basically, right after the travel ban came out, I kind of said, oh, well, political protest is great, and we saw a lot of that in Phoenix, especially student, I saw a lot of students talking about it in the first few days after the travel ban. But my fear was that in the midst of all the political protests and whatnot, that people were going to forget that we do have a Muslim community here in Phoenix. And so I went with that mindset, and I started thinking about what I could do, and I reached out to a group of 5 of my friends and said, hey, I have this idea. And we kind of expected, like, maybe 50 people from school or, like, some from our family or from our church to come, and we could do something small. But we put it up on Facebook, I think, that Monday, and the event was 2 weeks later, and it grew to 500 people that gathered at the mosque and had the opportunity to go inside the mosque and sit and listen to the imam and the president of the Islamic Community Center there speak about what Islam is, about Sharia law, about some of the misconceptions about Islam. And just our goal was to kind of be a facilitator for a conversation with people that some in Phoenix might not otherwise have the opportunity to get to know.
And in her rally, she had a community art project. We ended up, and Michaela, correct me if I'm wrong, was there a pizza place that donated a whole bunch of pizzas?
Yeah, no. We had a pizza place nearby donate. It was like 20 pizzas, I think.
Yeah, so everybody got fed. She had a local musician play. That was really powerful. And different organizations, and that's how I met Michaela, different organizations contacted her, I believe, or even just showed up. I'm not sure if they all contacted you, Michaela, but once we all got word, everybody just felt inspired. So we all just band together, and then it grew, like she said, to 500 people. And it was really the way I described it after the event. It was more like a festival. And it was so joyous and such a positive space for everybody. And there were a few protesters protesting against us. They were across the street. We had some officers there outside in plain clothes, so I felt they weren't as intimidating, so people didn't feel like they were under, you know, they were being watched necessarily. But they helped protect the event and the people that came to the event, and there were only like just a few protesters, which kind of surprised me, but it inspired the entire community. It was so amazing. From kids, I saw a priest there, I saw some rabbis, just from different religious organizations and community organizations. And then just anybody who wanted, just felt like they wanted to come out and support the community. So it ended up reaching a huge number of people within Phoenix. I'm not sure how far people drove or traveled to be there. It wasn't too far for me, but I would guess that people even as far as East Valley, which could mean, you know, 45 minutes to an hour away, came and participated.
Yeah, if I can speak on that a little bit, I had someone message me who had driven 3 hours to be there. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Shannon and Michaela. As folks can see, it's really about creating these visionary, beautiful, community-oriented spaces, and we don't always need to just stick to what the usual protests look like. I was wondering and hoping if there was anyone from the Midwest that was on the call that might want to share a tactic or an action that they might have organized the past few weeks. Okay, no one on the Midwest?
Well, I can jump in, Kalayana. Hi, this is Wayne in Illinois.
Oh, hey, Wayne.
Hi. Well, we have a high school that's really done some neat stuff. They came to one of our events on refugees and really got inspired, and since then they've done where they fixed backpacks for refugee students with all the supplies in it. They fixed 100 backpacks. And then last, or a couple weeks ago, when the when the travel ban went into effect, they did a before school rally outside of their high school and had 100 students show up at 7 a.m. to stand and hold banners and get cars to honk their horns, and that made local papers, and I thought it was pretty cool.
Thanks,
fantastic. Thank you so much, Blaine. Ed, I don't know how much time I have left, but can we have another region maybe talk about some of their tactics?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I just want to make sure that you've gotten through, you know, any points that you wish to make.
Sure. Well, actually, I can be really quick about it.
Yeah.
A couple things that folks should know. When you're constructing your actions, you should know that amnesty doesn't take part in civil resistance or civil disobedience. Civil resistance is breaking a neutral law to highlight a broader injustice. Civil resistance is basically getting arrested for trespassing. Civil disobedience is breaking an unjust law to highlight injustice. Rosa Parks refused to get up give her seat on the bus to a white man. That was civil disobedience. Amnesty does not take part in either one. But what we can do is to really bring a creative lens to the work that we're doing. A couple things to think about. We have some really great resources online right now at amnestyusa.org/protest. And I would really, really strongly suggest that folks reach out to their student activist coordinator, their area coordinator, and the field organizer and other folks to talk about what is possible. We have the amazing Member Empowerment Training Program trainers all over the country that are a great resource that you should reach out to as well. And if you're good with it, maybe we can have maybe one more person from the Faith and South.
Sure, go ahead.
Cool. Anyone from the South?
Hi.
Okay.
Sorry.
Hi, what's your name? Where are you from?
My name is Amber. So, and I'm like the NIAC person. I was going, can I mention something that I was gonna, I'm sorry. I'm very tired. I got a cough. Anyway, so one of the things that we did, it wasn't, very early on, like literally as soon as the ban or the executive order came out, groups on our campus, on Solar Space campus, started organizing a protest. And, you know, I live in Tallahassee, which is North Florida. And while Tallahassee is like the one blue dot, it's mostly like a really conservative area. So when we organize these kind of events, there's not a huge turnout. But we saw, like, I think, like, 1,000 people there. And it wasn't just students. It was, like, communities, and it really brought together all of Tallahassee. It was students. It was local organizers. There was someone from the International Rescue Committee there because we have an office here, and someone from CARE, Florida, and a local imam. Like, it was a really, like, brought together a lot of people, and they had a lot of coverage. But the biggest thing to me was, like, I can see that after that, the connections between the sort of human rights-oriented community within our city was really brought together, and it's now coordinating together, which is probably, like, the most inspiring thing I've seen this year. So it was great.
Great, thank you so much. And if folks have any other questions around tactics, what things we can do, I'm more than happy to share that. If you want to actually email Ed for more information, we can follow up with you. And once again, for some of those protest resources, go to amnestyusa.org/protest. Thank you so much, Ed, and everyone else.
Sure, thank you. Does anybody have a quick question for Kalyan? No? Okay, so let's move on. Shannon, can you pick it up here about region elections?
Sure, absolutely. I'm Shannon, and I'm the, like Ed said, an AC for Arizona. And I've been a part of Amnesty for probably about 28 years. Am I echoey at all?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah,
because I can hear it in my ear, too.
Everybody mute your phone and get off speakerphone. Thanks.
Sorry. okay, I'll try this. It's still kind of echoey. First, I wanted to say our state's really active, even prior to the events that just started since Trump took over. But it really, our actions really, really began on Inauguration Day when what started out as a protest rally ended up being more of an organic grassroots rally that we put together along with some other organizations and other activists that really aren't a part of any specific organization around the community to get together. And we each had an opportunity to speak about either our organization and what we do, and we used it as a platform so other people in our community would have resources so we could continue the work beyond that one action. We didn't want people to come out and just have that one action protest and then go home and not know what else to do. So that started, and when we were done with that, we created a Facebook group for Phoenix area activists, and it's really brought together activists around the community, like the events or the protest rally on Inauguration Day, where we can share events, we can share ideas. It's also a great platform that I can use to call on anyone at any time to take up action. If I can't do it or if somebody, one of my leaders can't do it, I can always depend on somebody on that network to be able to take up that action. So that's a nice resource to have. We're not always 100% available. So I would encourage you to set up something like that. I know not everybody is on Facebook, but it is a good resource. Arizona is actually really conservative, but there are pockets, like Maricopa County. There's certain counties and cities that are more socially progressive. And so when you think of Arizona, you think total red state. And there are some cities like Payson and some other cities up north that are super, super conservative. You'll see people walking around with guns and holsters. And but we're lucky in Maricopa County and Phoenix area where it's not as prevalent, but it's here. So what we have two senators who are McCain and Flake, I think you even mentioned that are both Republicans. The problem we found is that they're not accessible. So we can't even get through to McCain at all. Flake's also equally as difficult to get through on the phone. He had one day where he had meetings set up. So our legislative coordinator went out and attempted to meet, but it ended up being just chaotic, and he didn't even show up. So, and the town halls that he says he has are really ticketed events that I couldn't even find information on how to get the tickets. So it's been a challenge. The one thing we've done here is we've created a lobby team. So, for example, tonight we have a town hall with one of our state reps, and I wasn't able to do it because I'm on this call, and our LC, our legislative coordinator, had another commitment. So we were able to call on our team and have some members from our team go down to that town hall and participate. So it makes it a lot easier for us to do legislative action when we have a team of people working on it. Now, we're in March. We're going to have a Lobby 101 training. It's going to take place in our regular Phoenix meeting, but that way people that are interested can learn the basics of lobbying. And when we have teams go to our lobby visit, it ranges from members who have had no experience whatsoever to our legislative coordinator who has a ton of experience and knows exactly what he's doing. So it's a really good learning experience for our members, and it gets our lobby actions done. The other thing we've done, I mentioned the rally, and I had Michaela speak on that earlier, but what we found is that, like Jesus said, you have to be really strategic. So I kind of go through
and watch comments, as angry as they make me, watch comments on protests that go on around here. So, like, we had one the other day where there were people blocking the freeway. So you go on there and you look at the, I was looking at the comments, and you can see what angers the more conservative group of people that are against the protests and, you know, love what's going on and that kind of thing. So it helps us, or helps me, learn what works and what doesn't work. So we try to plan our events either on weeknights or weekends. So it's not during the day when people work, because we have a lot of negative feedback when that happens. There are times like the inauguration protest rally where we wanted to have it during the inauguration. So it had to be on the Friday during the day, but otherwise, it's not something like that where it has to be at a specific time. We try and do it where it's more accessible for everybody to come, and we don't get as much flash or negative feedback from people who want to complain about it in any way they can. So it gives them one less thing to complain about. The other thing we've done here, we had Paul Young come out and do a tactical training in January. And we learned different tactical skills to use during protests, mainly protests, and that helped build confidence in our membership base and gave us tools that we could share with our membership leaders here, or members here, and our leaders here, as well as anybody else who wants to join in on our events with us.
Who's going to pick them up? I thought you were. Oh, no, Kelly, you were supposed to wait for him.
Someone told me that.
Oh, Colin.
If somebody could mute, that would be great. I think that maybe that's why I'm not. I can hear myself.
He's been waiting there all this time. The class was over an hour ago.
Okay, I'll try and continue just for time's sake. Sorry. But we do, like Julian said, we want to try and get be creative. So him and I were having a conversation last night briefly about different direct actions that we could take. And one thing our community does like is they like community art projects or art installations. That brings out a really good crowd. Vigils or anything peaceful. I've also reached out to different organizations like ACLU or Anti-Defamation League, IRC, which is a refugee group here. Actually, they're international, so you probably have offices or groups if you're in a major city. And partnered with them because they're the ones who are actually doing it. That's what, like IRC, for example, their focus is refugees, so that's all they do. So it makes it easier for us to join in their actions because they're the experts on that topic. So one thing I wanted to touch on briefly before I open up for any questions or anything, one thing that inspired me, I wanted to add to what Colleen had asked us, was IRC had an event that had there were refugees present, but what was most powerful at that event was they had displays of items that refugees brought with them when they had to flee their countries or their villages, cities, what have you. So you actually got to see how very little they got to bring with them. Some of them included with, you know, families, and these were whole families. So you got to see this little tiny backpack that a family of four had to take with them, and that's all they could take. So visual things like that are really powerful and really touch on how important it is that we fight for the rights of these groups of people. So I suggest doing things like that. Really, lobbying and town halls are what we're focusing on in the next few weeks, but and just reaching out to other activists. And I think that's about it. I don't want to go over too much time. So if anybody has any questions, you can also ask me later if you want to.
Any questions for Shannon?
Happy Shannon, this is Carol. I've just joined the call now, having been on an AGM call until just 5 minutes ago. I wonder if you have been doing anything with the press. Have you got... Particularly particularly because we find that people don't know any difference between an immigrant and an asylum seeker and a refugee. And we're wondering if you've done, if any of your groups have done any editorials or any letters to the press.
I have, actually. I've been working with the media department with AI, and we just wrote the second one. The first one we wrote was for the Arizona Republic, our major newspaper here, but they didn't publish it, so we're submitting a new one to the East Valley Tribune, and I believe they're submitting that tomorrow or maybe even done it today. There's certain restrictions on the type of, whether it's a letter to the editor or an opinion piece. So depending on what you're writing, there are word restrictions. So if you want something long, you have to submit it as a certain type of letter. I think letters to the editor can be longer. So we've done two of those, or we're doing our second one. The first one was not published, though. But we are trying.
I wonder if you get anything into the press, if you could make sure that you circulate that through the AC network, through the Area Coordinators Network would be helpful.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Yes.
Now, would you want me to share that regardless of whether it's printed or published?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
So. Definitely.
Okay.
So, and we will do likewise.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll send the first one out. I don't want to send the second one out until I know that they've submitted it.
No.
So I'll send that first one out to our AC group list, and then that way they can distribute it to local
good.
Leaders if they choose
yes.
to do that.
That's good.
Great idea, Carol.
Yeah, I had almost forgotten about that. Sorry.
Okay, other questions? No? Okay, I really do want to move on. I want to make sure that I include my students on this call. I'm very proud of this. I'm really glad to have these three young voices on our call, letting us know what they've been doing as youth leaders regionally. So, Mohini, can you start us off and just, you know, give us a rundown of some of the work that you've been doing on campus and otherwise?
Yeah, absolutely. So, my name is Mohini. I'm an SAC in Lexington, Virginia, at Washington and Lee University. So my campus is quite conservative, and I actually started the Amnesty International chapter on my campus, which I thought it was going to be very difficult, but given an event and just the general, I guess I just didn't realize how many people were as interested in human rights. So it's been quite successful. But what we did this past February 2nd is in partnership with a student group called the Student Association for Black Unity, we came together and we had a vigil in which we stood with refugees and immigrants. And the way that we advertised it was specifically a rally where we were standing with refugees and immigrants. This was like before I personally knew about the No Ban, No Law that Amnesty was going for. I don't know why I didn't know that scholarship, but I think it was probably better that we had it as standing with refugees rather than against the ban and the wall, because in my personal experience, I've seen that when you're standing for something, or something positive, that tends to bring a lot more people to the rally, especially in an area that is as conservative as Lexington, Virginia. So we ended up having over 200, maybe over 250, I've been told different numbers by different news groups. But essentially what we did was we reached out personally to a lot of different student groups, faculty, and community members, and we had an open mic. So we asked a couple of people to speak, but we didn't really filter what they were going to say, as long as we knew that, you know, they were going to be speaking for the message that we were trying to get across. So we had a couple of Muslim professors speak. We had some students speak as well, both Muslim and non-Muslim, in terms of like their experiences with being an immigrant even, not like just Muslims, because in our area we just don't have that many. And so we wanted to make it more inclusive so that we would bring together more people. As people talked about how their individual friends and family are affected, there's one individual whose parents were not, like, their, I think their visa was denied, so they're not allowed to come and see him for graduation, and he was just absolutely, he was so miserable because of this, and so he spoke about that. And then what we had on top of that was a donations table for a refugee resettlement program in Georgia called the New American Pathways, and we were able to raise over $1,700 in just that time. Then we also did a little bit of fundraising the next day for the same cause. I think it was really effective to have a rally and then also have donations that people felt like they were really contributing to something meaningful. And just being able to harness that energy and that passion and encourage people to donate to this refugee resettlement program, which actually follows refugees for more than 5 years after they've been resettled, which is far more than most other refugee resettlement programs. It was amazing, and we had a lot of news organizations coming out and like, oh my goodness, this tiny little town, Lexington, Virginia, that never has anything happen, pulled together this big rally. So after everyone spoke, we had a candlelight vigil down, we have a colonnade area, it's a big field. We had everyone walk down with a candle, and then we had a dessert reception. So it was a really great event. And yeah, if anyone has any questions on how to organize something like that, please let me know. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mohini? Thanks, Mohini, because I think this really shows the kind of creativity that students have. So let's move on to Amber. I don't want to lose anyone here. If you can all hang on. Thank you. Amber?
Hi. Okay. Can everyone hear me all right? It's all good? Okay. So I hear some echoes. But we're going to just power through that. So I am the National Youth Action Committee member for the South. I'm also the president of my local my SSU chapter here at Florida State University. And I'm an SSE for Florida as well. I do a lot of stuff, and I'm going to keep this short because I know everyone wants to go to sleep, or at least the people on the east side are help going to sleep soon. I kind of want to focus on sort of deciding what your student group or your particular group is good at, when you're, sort of have these, very urgent actions taking place. For example, we sort of help facilitate for other groups when it comes to, protests, because we are not usually the ones putting it on. There's other groups that are a lot better at organizing those. So we just sort of help amplify their voice. And that's how we got, that really big Tallahassee protest happening. But a couple of the things that our group is really good at, one of them is, outreach. Especially through social media, we got two people on it, and we got an email literally a couple of days after the executive order got signed, from an international student, a PhD student from Iran, who was in Iran at the time because of a funeral for his father, and he emailed us asking us, I don't know what to do. I'm here, I'm stuck, and I can't come back. And he's doing research. This is his last semester. We took our resources and we said, we directed him to an immigration lawyer who's our director, and does kind of human rights work all the time. We asked him, hey, do you mind if we share your story? Can we just write down a summary of what happened to you? We don't have to share your name. but we just really want people to know that this is happening and it's immediately affecting our students. And that's what we did. We posted it on our page. It got, I think, like 20,000 views. It was a lot. It got a lot of traffic. And it just kind of forced our community to respond. Our FSU president, who's conservative and really isn't great about really backing students when it comes to these kind of issues, you know, sent a letter out. In the background, actually contacted the Department of Homeland Security and made sure that he helped along with our Human Rights Center to make sure that student got back. He got back last week. But the most important part was just the fact that it's something that got around our community. We had one of our students interview with a local news channel, and she was on TV, and we had a lot of listeners, news people come around this particular story. And that's something that it's good, that our particular group is really good at. And then, you know, when it comes to different things, one of them being is organizing protests, we made sure that we connected with the correct groups to make sure that that happened. And that's how we kind of faced those different challenges. So that's something that I really encourage everyone to think about when you're doing work on No Ban the Wall, is decide, you know, what it is that you think that your group is really good at. So it's if it's outreach through social media, is it lobbying, is it organizing a protest that's going to really be it's going to get a lot of attention. Do that and make sure to connect with other groups that are doing that work and that can supplement whatever, that, you know, you can help them with what they're doing and they can help you back. Because if anything, this is a really great way to make those connections within your own community. So if anyone has some questions, or I tried my best to keep this short.
No, it's wonderful. Any questions for Amber? Great ideas. Any questions?
Cool.
Okay. So I don't want to miss Kaylee here. Thank you, Amber. Kaylee, I know, has done some really wonderful things at Berkeley, and I want her to share those with you. Kaylee? Do we still have Kaylee on the line?
Yeah, I'm right here. Can
okay,
everyone hear
go
me?
Ahead. Yep, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Kylie. I'm a actually, can you give me 1 minute? Sorry, I'm just plugging in my phone. Sorry, let me just plug in my phone.
Okay.
Hi. So I'm the co-president of my Amnesty International High School group. I've been involved with Amnesty since I was a freshman. And this year we have about 30 students in our group. And in light of the No Ban, No Wall Amnesty actions, I actually created an assembly at Berkeley High with about 20 of other high school students that are in the coalition. And to do this, we actually rented out the school auditorium. We rented the school auditorium, and we had about 1,000 students come to this assembly. I go to a high school with around 3,800 students, so it was a third of the school.
Okay, wait a minute.
Does
everybody? Because whoever that is, log off the phone, please, or go on mute, please.
And at this assembly, I coordinated with the president of Muslim Student Association, as well as the president of Chicano Latino United Voices, and we basically came up with a presentation and a slideshow to present to students over two periods. So we sent out an email to all of the teachers at school, and teachers could sign up for Come First Serve to bring their classes to these presentations. So working with the two presidents of Muslim Student Association, we came up with ways that we can effectively be allies on campus. The two presidents also educated the school on how to spot Islamophobia and how we can stand up and protect our students on campus who are being targeted by this anti-Muslim rhetoric running rampant right now. So the assembly was about 2 hours in all, and then we also had a video that one of the students in video production made interviewing a teacher who went over 10 safe ways to protest. So the assembly was titled Moving Forward. It was in light of the walkout that our school had at the January 10th at the inauguration. And then we tried to make it less of a, less of an anti-Trump space where kind of like hate could fester and more of a way of literally moving forward in light of this new administration and how they can continue to protect students on campus. So in addition to that assembly, I also led about 25 Berkeley High students, and we took the BART chain to San Francisco across the bay from where I live. And we also teamed up with the local middle school, and so we brought along about 5 middle schoolers, and we attended the No Ban, No Wall rally in San Francisco, and met up with Bill Butkus, who's the field organizer for MC West. And there we had a group of around 25 kids, and we helped Bill pass out banners and posters that had, sayings like refugees are welcome here, no ban, no wall. And we listened to about a dozen speakers from all around the Bay Area. There's a really strong Yemeni community in San Francisco, so there were a lot of speakers from Yemen. And it was really great to expose the middle schoolers to this kind of activism, since a lot of them were in 7th and 8th grade and didn't really have that kind of support group of activism at their middle school. So hopefully it inspired some of them to take action and continue the action when they come to Berkeley High next fall. In addition, after the assembly that I helped create, we passed out little pamphlets that we had folded. We folded about 200 of these poster pamphlets, and it was Safe Voice to Protest, what to bring to a protest, bring snacks, water, sunscreen, and how to effectively mobilize your community. So we handed those out to students as they were leaving the theater. And then we've also been putting up posters around school. We have a weekly meeting with my Amnesty group, and we've been making our own posters and putting that all around school, which has been a really helpful way to communicate to the entire school what our group is up to. And it's been getting a lot more students to come join, since a lot of students are feeling like, are feeling a sense of urgency that we're all feeling. And then we've also been calling senators. I know that a lot of you mentioned in this call to continue to put pressure on our representatives and let them know what we're feeling and what we want them to do and to take action. So we had a phone bake last week, and we called around 10 senators for an hour. So we were spaced all around school and all on our phones. And we called, among them, we called Jeff Flake, we called John McCain, we called Bob Corkers, we called Dan Sullivan from Arkansas, Bob Corkers from Tennessee, and calling about the Muslim ban and voicing our concerns about that. So we have the assembly. We went to San Francisco. Let's see what else. handed out protest tips and putting up posters around school. And then this weekend, we're actually having a big sale for around 5 or 6 hours. And with the funds we're going to donate it to Amnesty, and in addition, we'll be printing out petitions. Great. With UC Berkeley, which is 10 minutes away from our campus, and team up with them.
That's terrific. That's really great and creative. Do we have any questions?
Hello?
Do we have any questions?
Oh, sorry. I got cut
off. No, Ed, just
yes.
To thank the students who spoke. That's great to hear them doing those things. It's
thank
great.
You, Carol.
Thank
Thanks
you.
For joining me in that. I'm proud to have
you. Yeah, that was great work. Thank you. I'm pleased to hear all the good work you're doing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we can see this as a real source of energy and creativity that we can take advantage of in our actions and, planning. So, I mean, really thank you to all of our students and all of our speakers. Do we have any final questions for any of the speakers, for Shannon, for Kalyan, Jiva, Amber, Mohini, anyone? Do we have any students on the call that would like to say something?
I actually, it's not so much of a question, but, like, it's more of a if you live in the South and or just generally if you're a student, I don't know if there's going to be some is there's going to be sent, notes sent out or something, but if you need to contact a student like me specifically, like if you have questions or concerns, like et cetera, I part of my thing with National Youth Committee is like sort of helping out students with whatever they, with whatever they want to do. Like, I want to be a resource. So I'm just putting it out there. Like, if you eventually want to, like, talk to me, like, I'm sure, there's a way you could, Edwin, get
sure.
contact if you have questions. Yeah,
absolutely.
So, like,
if anyone wants to contact anyone on the call, the easiest way is to contact me. You can respond to the email that you received. My email address is egur@aiusa.org. And just so everyone knows, all of these calls are recorded and are posted in the Activist Resource Community, ARC, on the website, and you can all have access to that. But again, just to make things simpler, you can contact me to get in touch with any of the speakers here. And you can probably contact them through ARC as well. Any questions for anybody on the call?
I have a question for Jiva. Jiva talked about elevating people's stories, and he briefly talked about one person. Is this stuff written down so that we can have it in a format that we can get it out to people that are doing things in the community so they actually can
mm-hmm.
relate those stories to people they talk to?
Is this Angie?
Yes.
Hi, Angie. Go ahead.
Hi.
Yeah, that's one of the sets of resources that is in development still. So I mentioned two of those stories, and some of them, some of the pile of stories that we have are through coming through newspaper articles and those kinds of things, and others are more direct conversations. And I think, I'm still waiting for the green light on when those stories will become available, but especially hearing it, that it would be useful, which it's a good reminder to kind of push on that. And, the other set of stories that will actually be more like we expect to be more like actual cases, because the stories that I was telling earlier actually resolved, even though the suffering in them was very real and the trauma is still experienced. some of the cases of folks who are being deported on the border right now who are asylum seekers. We expect those to be in development over the next several weeks. So definitely great reminder to get some of those out, and I'll put it onto my agenda tomorrow to try to get those into formats that we can get to folks as soon as possible.
Okay, thanks.
Good. Any other questions?
This is Carol in rural, and I stress rural New Mexico. I missed most of the call, but just to emphasize to anybody who's on the call who comes from a small town or a small rural community, you don't have to be in a big city to be able to do something on the streets of your village or your town. And I will give my information to Ed, and he can publicize that, because we do things weekly. Every Friday we have a demonstration on the sidewalk with signs, and about 500 people pass our signs every week. Not much compared with a big city, but it counts.
Thank you, Carol. That's great.
Actually, I'm sorry, just one little comment on that note. I know that there's actually a lot of students who live in, like, small communities. I have, I live in the South, which is, like, a lot of very small communities with, like, some really, really big cities in between, like, Florida, just, Orlando and Miami, and then, like, a little bit of Tallahassee, and, like, that's it. Everything else is, like, you're in the actual middle of nowhere. But I would argue those are, like, actually the most important places and to reach out, and actually where you can do the most important work, because this is where you can, like, reach communities. Like, you don't necessarily have to do big things. It doesn't have to be a huge rally. But, here there's, like, one, or at least, I'm an immigrant, so I know, like, if I live in a small town, like, I can go talk and I can be open, and, I personally can make the decision to, like, go talk to people who, like, think differently from me. And that's actually maybe a lot better, because, in a big city that you can usually, like, it'll be, like, a big community of a lot of people who think very similarly. And the point is to reach those people who, like, have never met an immigrant or an asylum seeker or someone who's Muslim, and, like, try to sort of appeal to their heart, and, like, for them to have, like, an image of who we are and what we're trying to do. So I'll say that.
Yeah, and to jump in just really fast on that point, this is Mohini. I'm from Lexington, Virginia, which is so tiny. It's insane. And there are Confederate flags everywhere, and we had KKK flyers just the other day. The other year, sorry, this was last year. Is someone speaking? Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay. But I think that these are the areas where the most needs to be done. There are the most people whose minds need to be exposed to a lot of the ideas that we're bringing. It's been a struggle, for sure, but it's really important.
Hi, this is Kylie. Can I add one more thing?
Of course.
Just hearing the other students speak, it's definitely eye-opening for me, because coming from Berkeley, obviously, I live in a very liberal bubble. And a lot of times people at my school, they'll complain and say, oh, this is an echo chamber. Why are we doing these presentations? Like, we already know that, we have a president who's implementing policies we don't agree with. But this, just gives me renewed energy that what we're fighting for is the right thing, and that there's people, my age fighting for the same thing without the same support that I have in my community. So thank you to the other students for sharing what you guys are going through, because it definitely has inspired me tonight.
Fantastic. That's what we want.
this is Shannon. I'll add one really super quick thing after hearing, listening to the students. I find it really beneficial. We do this a lot here in Phoenix where we pair up with the students. So we have our local group members and activists join in activities with our students, and it makes it stronger because the students have they're better at certain things than I would be. So if you have kind of the best of both worlds when you combine your talent, whether it's a small action or a large action. I think I really encourage everybody to do that and use those resources.
Absolutely. I think that's great. Any other questions for our longstanding members, Ken, Allison, Carolyn, do you have a question for students or some of the other speakers?
Actually, I'm so sorry. I had one more comment that I forgot to make. One thing, especially with students, particularly students in universities, is that we have a lot of access to a lot of really great institutional stuff, one being professors who are experts in a lot of different things. Like, my advisor is in human rights, like immigration lawyer. So, like, we were able to connect, like, that student from Iran with him, and they were able to get him back. So, like, one really great thing that I think student groups can do that's really easy is kind of assess, like, what resources there are at school, and keeping that in mind, so, like, when people reach out to you in, like, times like these, to see if you can refer people to those things. So, like, if there's someone who's a DACA student who's afraid or something, like, if you know that there's some sort of institutional, like, thing that can, like, help that student and can bring them some comfort, like, make sure that you try to do that, because, like, that's one advantage that we have. We have access to resources that a lot of people don't. And it's good to make sure that we have those on hand when things like this happen.
Great, thanks. Any final comments, questions?
Ed, this is Carolyn in Vermont. I just, listening to the students and to everybody, but listening to the students tonight just gives me such great hope, as a veteran AI person. And thank you so much, all of the students, because I know you're busy being students also. And just thank you so very much. I'm very inspired. Thank you.
This is David in New Jersey. I echo what Carolyn just said. And as I sit here, I'm reading how a deportee threw himself from a bridge on his way back into Mexico today and committed suicide. So I know that's not good news. But it underlines why what we're doing here now is so important. And I want to thank everybody for being involved.
That's great. Thank you.
This is Blaine. Let me add one more comment. I agree with what Shannon said completely. To work with student groups and local groups, that's a great combination and powerful. And then I want to go back to the beginning, what Jeeva said about taking care of ourselves and looking out for each other. I had a 29-year-old young woman who committed suicide. I was trying to get her involved in human rights work, and she has an Iranian parent, and just felt despair. So let's look out for each other and take care of ourselves.
Good. That's a good comment. Good suggestions. Okay. Unless there's something pressing someone needs to add. Okay. I really want to thank everyone for hanging around. This is a unique call. It doesn't usually go this long, but I think it's uniquely crucial. There was really important information to share tonight, and I think we learned a lot. And we can see how much we have to learn from our student and youth membership. And I think they've seen what they can learn from each other and from established members as well. So let's keep up this dialogue. I think it's wonderful. Thank you for joining this call. I want to, again, acknowledge our wonderful speakers, Jeeva Mansky, Kalyan Mendoza, Shannon Rossett, Mohini Tangri, Amber Martin, and Kaylee Meyer, and I want to thank them especially for sharing their expertise and creativity with us today. Thanks to all of you who called in and those who shared questions, comments, and for our returning friends. Remember that all these monthly calls are recorded and will be listed in the Activist Resource Community ARC on our website. If you want to reach anyone on this call, you can contact me, Edwin, at egur@aiusa.org. So join us again next month and go out and take action. Thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you all for facilitating.
Okay, you're welcome.